Life, oh, life, it's so full of mysteries. Like, how did a movie about sharks and a tornado get made three different times? We'll never know. Or how do some fast food beans get made with silicon dioxide? Wait, did I read that right? Yeah, fast food beans get made with silicon dioxide. Ugh, disgusting. Okay, what I do know is that Chipotle only serves beans that are seasoned with chipotle chili, garlic, cumin, and oregano. Chipotle. It's mystery-free food. Get on it. And let me tell you something. If you're producing content online, there is no better creative resource than Pond 5. I say it time and time again. If you need video clips, motion graphic templates, music, and even sound effects, Pond 5 is there like, I don't know, a sober buddy when you're thinking about drinking again. They're going to help you through everything. They're going to make sure that you come out the right way. Pond 5 has the amazing media that you need to perfect your creative productions without exhausting your budget or your time, because they make it easy. Just head on over to pond5.com. And now, let me tell you something. Pond 5 isn't a bunch of posers. No, they support a global community of artists, some of the highest payouts in the industry. What does that mean? That means that you're going to get high quality, diverse content, not like some dippy shit site. Pond 5 is the master site. Go to pond5.com right now and you're going to get 25% off some of the best media ever, because this is media that you can use wherever and whenever you need it. It's fast, it's affordable, and even more so with this exclusive code for 25% off on your next purchase. Just enter bonkers, B-O-N-K-E-R 25. That's bonkers 25 at checkout on pond5.com, and you'll be saving money and time faster than you can say, action! Jackson. Hey everybody, before we start the show, I want to remind you to head over to slashfilm.com to read Blake J. Harris's article about this actual movie. That's right, he interviewed the people involved and found the stories behind the scenes. It's the how did this get made of how did this get made. Head on over to slashfilm.com, read his article, and if you haven't been reading them, what are you doing? Catch up. All right, here's the show. Finally, He-Man the way you want to see him, on Earth with a bunch of teens. We saw Masters of the Universe, so you know what that means. Now it's time for How Did This Get Made? We're gonna have a good time, celebrate some failure, not just be a hater, cause you know you wonder, how did this get made? Let's wallow in the mediocrity of subpar art. Perhaps we'll find the answer to the question, how did this get made? Hello, people of Earth, and welcome to How Did This Get Made? Old school theme song. Please welcome my two co-hosts, Jason Manzoukas. How are you, Jason?
I'm good, Paul. How are you?
Very good. And June Diane Raphael. How are you, June?
I'm doing great. How are you, Paul?
Really good. I want to remind you guys, if you've not been reading them, Blake Harris has been writing amazing How Did This Get Made companion pieces. He's interviewing real people from these movies, talking to them and getting great stories. Masters of the Universe is the same story there. Check it out on Slash Film. Here we go. We have a very special guest today. Please welcome to the program Emmy nominee. At this point, Emmy nominee, Tatiana Maslany, Orphan Black. We are huge fans. We're so excited that you're here.
I'm huge fans of this podcast. I'm a few huge fans of this podcast.
Recording this on Emmy weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
We could technically, in a couple days when this gets released, we could be saying now, Emmy winner.
Yes.
We could be really, you know.
I highly doubt it.
That's Do you want to try your dresses on for us?
Yes.
And we can help you decide what to wear this weekend?
They're actually just being carted in right now.
Perfect.
This is going to be great. I'll be trying on outfits.
And we're here to do hair and makeup for
great.
You.
Great.
For
yes.
The
and the winner of the podcast gets to be your date to the Emmy.
Hey,
right?
This is
going to
be very exciting. Unfortunately, it's coming out after the Emmy, so that
God
contest is really... messed up. This movie, Masters of the Universe, has been a movie that people have told us to do for a very long time and has been unavailable. And it finally came on Netflix.
I can't imagine why this movie wasn't available to watch just easily.
It still wasn't available on Canadian Netflix, PS.
Oh, really?
No. I had to buy this movie.
Well, we thank you
on this film.
This movie is...
Consider yourselves lucky.
Yeah, I do. Now I own it.
Canada.
Yeah. Oh, well, right.
Well, now it's going to make a really nice piece in your bookcase of DVDs, just Masters of the Universe right up there. This movie is, to me, and I know we're going to probably upset some diehard He-Man fans, but has nothing to do with He-Man at all, really.
No.
I mean, like, anything that I remember of it, Orko and a tiger.
I don't know the He-Man mythology.
Okay.
This is my intro to it. So
yeah.
I was like, I just took it at face value, like, this is what... He is.
Well, it's interesting because the first shot of He-Man, like the first kind of
the first time we see him after we meet Skeletor, he looks just disinterested.
Yeah.
Just like, it's like the strangest reaction. He's just like, yeah.
Well, this brings
like,
me to
he
like,
doesn't even want to be there.
It brings me to my first point, which is He-Man seems to be not spectacular at anything.
No, nope. His fight style is like marked at, like it's yes. like yes. a it's like yes. a rehearsal.
Yes. Yeah.
Like we're just like kind of going to walk yes. through the yep. motions.
Yes. It's slow and yeah. deliberate.
Like 50%. Yep. Let's yeah. do this at 50%.
But is He-Man's, I mean, are his, I don't know that He-Man's.
We have to only base it on what we're watching, so I guess.
Okay, but he's just strong?
But he doesn't even seem that strong. He doesn't seem.
No, he doesn't.
He doesn't seem that much stronger than anyone that he fights.
Sure.
He doesn't seem like his sword work is any much better.
He
like,
just kind of holds it in the air.
Yeah.
To be fair, he uses the sword more. More than using the sword to cut down people, he uses it to deflect laser blasts yeah, and right. to hold in the other hand from the hand that he's holding a gun in.
He yeah. uses he's
shooting guns always.
A lot of gun shooting. He uses his sword as a shield.
Yes.
And then uses his gun as his weapon.
Yeah.
Which is a bizarre and, thing.
I did not play with He-Man. The cartoons were not anything I watched. But I don't remember him having a laser gun as
no.
part of his setup.
It also felt like he was just kind of picking those up off yes. the ground. Like yes. it wasn't
he's
something
a,
he had. It was
he's
like,
a
oh,
fucking
yeah.
scavenger.
Well, it was like playing a game of Halo. Like you yes. run around and be like, oh, pick up gun, blah, 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 blah.
This, yeah.
Well, was this considered like a He-Man movie? Like,
yes. I mean, this is the He-Man.
Wow.
Live what? Action He-Man.
Again, I don't know He-Man. I don't feel connected to him as a character, but I feel badly for him.
But do you
and
now?
This was it.
Yeah.
Well, but here's the thing.
This was
The end of the movie, spoiler alert, but the end of the movie, he does take the sword back and goes, I have the power. Which is not the He-Man saying, but what? But like, yeah, he said, by the power
the
of.
That, isn't that the end of He-Man saying? By the what, power of Grayskull,
he goes,
I have the power.
Oh, okay.
I think that is.
He says
his,
power twice in his.
I think so.
By the power of Grayskull, I have the power.
That's
power.
Right.
But he. But even when he does that, it's the first time that he has done that,
yep.
and he had the sword the entire time. I don't understand, like, what that gave him. The power didn't seem to
be
more.
Giving him the power that Skeletor was trying to steal.
Which is the power
like
of the universe?
Like that cosmic power kind
right.
of thing.
Well, which brings me to my next question, which is, can anyone succinctly describe what the plot of this movie was?
Oh, wow.
Ooh, yeah, that's tough.
I know the emotional journey of the teens. Like, I yes. feel like Courtney Cox's character was
Courtney
like
Cox
very,
is in this movie.
Yes.
So in the movie.
She's like 100%
in this movie.
I feel like she's giving, she is committed to this character, which is, I mean, I love, like, sometimes when you look at, like, the cast of Friends, they did do a lot of weird things. Like, Jennifer Aniston was in Leprechaun.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
really? Like, Courtney Cox is in Masters of the Universe.
Which also has a leprechaun-esque character.
Oh yeah, this
but
movie.
See, what is her emotional journey, though?
Well,
let's
yeah.
get
well,
into
the
it.
Thing is, she lost her parents
yes.
in a plane crash.
Yes, a lot
her
of
dad
about.
Was the pilot, yes.
and it was just to go to a beach, which seemed yeah. really close. Like we're going to the beach in a plane.
Wait, time I think out, it was that. First of all, we see the house that she lives in with her parents. Yeah. It's modest.
Yeah,
mm. at best. It is very modest.
Yeah.
So her dad is not.
We get what you're saying. I mean, the subtext of that is she's like a poor, gross person.
Well, super gross.
I don't. Okay. She's a disgusting, garbage poor person.
Who wears onesie pajamas.
Her parents cannot afford a private plane.
No, no. They're flying like a propeller. Her dad is like a propeller plane pilot, I think.
I mean, I think June's saying that he can only afford like a remote control airplane at best.
Even then. Okay, I have to be totally honest.
I agree. Like, let's break
up,
it down.
Taking June. Up flying as a hobby.
Her dad is wearing
people.
Glasses.
That is for rich people. Mm-hmm. The better people. Okay. Well, the
plan. Sure, sure. Society's chosen one.
Okay. Absolutely. <Yeah. laughs>
We're going to get a lot of feedback on who's able to fly.
Well, look, I mean, look,
and
this,
should be able to
this
fly
podcast goes
right.
out to
get
the right people.
Out of our skies, poor people.
Because, by the way, to rent, to first of all,
maybe
to
that's
purchase
why they crash.
A plane and to.
She seemingly
takes
the keys
to keep from that plane in a hangar. That's,
sure.
Oh, these are
oh hangar costs?
Expensive
hangar.
Hobby.
It's like buying a boat.
That's right.
Oh. Kevin Hart can afford it, not her dumb parents.
No.
Yeah, they live in a very modest home. So
but in a pretty nice suburb, a pretty nice little town, very idyllic kind of. Yeah.
It's fine.
It's
fine. For gross people, it's fine.
Yes. June's really changed, guys.
It's fine.
It's fine.
It might as well be Detroit.
But June right now is burning money as she's talking.
I do think it goes to her character's journey because she is supposed to be just a girl who's waitressing for some extra cash and wants to get out of this town,
yep.
this podunk town. Mm. And so in that scenario, her parents don't own a private plane.
No.
They do not.
Well, by the way, why overcomplicate it? Just say they got into a car accident, right? I mean,
I was so ready for the scene in which they justified why they were on a flight because I thought when they went into that portal, they were going to zoom past their parents midair.
Oh, I'm sorry. Wait. What?
That makes more sense to me than what happened.
Titanic, thank you. It does?
Yes, absolutely. Because why else?
It makes more sense that you both anticipated that we would see them flying in midair next to the plane?
Because
and get them in there and then all head out together.
Yes.
Into the other side.
They're
going to
grab them out of the plane?
Or just grab the plane. If your cars, by the way, cars are going through that portal.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, they could
so
grab.
So you think the parents are continually in this portal of the airplane?
No, I thought for sure we were going to find them like midair and they were going to exit on the other side.
Because why else would you put them in the air?
Why?
Yeah.
Why?
Unless to use it.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was insane.
Well,
yeah.
That was insane. Yes. That was insane that they didn't do that.
In my opinion.
You know what I loved about that side story was the introduction of it where it cuts to after like the cute banter like over chicken wings or something between Courtney Cox and her boyfriend.
Kevin.
Who's the real hero of the movie because he's a man.
Yeah,
played by,
exactly.
Yeah, it's so great.
And then it cuts to like a wide shot of just the car and she goes, I really want to go say bye to my parents. He goes, yeah, sure. And it's just like, okay, or I want to go to the graveyard to say bye to my parents. Yeah, sure. It's just like, okay, that's the next thing, the next scene that we do.
They also, by the way, when they're at that gravesite, they're just looking at the gravesite, and then it's like a really emotional moment, and they're like, oh, cool, look, this thing just fell out of the sky. Oh, wow, and they start playing with it immediately. Right. All
and
emotion
is like,
dropped.
This thing is like, beep, boop, beep, and he's like, it's a Japanese synthesizer. Done.
That fell from
decision
the sky.
Decision made.
By the way,
I know what it is, Japanese synthesizer.
One of those Japanese synthesizers.
By the way, just in case you are confused, yes, this movie starts in Eternia, which is the He-Man land, and then quickly and without any real
Skeletor and all of those, like all of the components of He-Man, I'm assuming.
Right. Mm-hmm. For the first 5 minutes, and then clicks over to just present day America.
I'm so happy they did, though.
And
I'm so happy.
But with no transition.
Land.
It was like, we're in it. We're in a rib shack.
It was
like,
yes. It was as if 7 minutes into Zardoz.
Yeah.
He finds himself in, Sean Connery finds himself in like 1984 suburban America. And is just running around with a rifle in his weird red diaper going like, Zardoz! Like, it's that jarring a juxtaposition.
And they don't seem to be trying to hide being in America.
Well, they don't know where they are. They just know they're on another planet.
But this is my big problem. No, they don't seem... Have they done this type of time traveling before through portals?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
And has anyone in present day, 1984 or whatever year it was, seen anyone from...
Eternia?
Yeah. Because nobody seems that surprised.
No, yeah. Oh, no. That there's like a real-life gremlin walking around?
Yes. That guy. Nobody. That guy.
I just kept thinking Jar Jar Binks for some reason from his introduction.
Really this movie is – the production values are so terrible that I kept worrying for the actor in that prosthetic because it moved so little. I was like, he must be dying.
By the way, that's Billy Barty, famous Billy Barty, who's been in a lot of costumes like that. But – By the way, these costumes hurt the actors badly.
I felt bad for Frank Langella. Skeletor.
Well, I think his is the one that doesn't have that many problems. Because Meg Foster's costume, she's the woman who fought around with He-Man.
Evil Lynn?
Oh, wait, yes.
Oh, no, the other one.
No, you're right.
Evil Lynn. Meg Foster's Evil Lynn. Oh. Her costume weighed 45 pounds, and the actress sustained bruises to her groin and breastplate.
I'm listening.
It constructed of fiberglass, and it restricted her movements a great deal, which is why she's never shown sitting. And she said the discomfort from the costume helped inform her performance, but the weight and design of the costume made her puff out her chest during every take, which generated the character's slinky posture.
Oh, you know what? I use a bruised groin all the time when I act. I'm like, ooh, I'm going to use this bruised groin.
But I'm sorry to go back to the parents. I just need you for 1 second. So
yeah.
Courtney Cox's parents.
So let me understand. They were all planning to go to the beach that day.
Yes.
No. No, I don't think
so. Yes.
She wanted them to do something with her and stay, I thought.
They were like, we're going to go to the beach. And she's like, I'm going to stay home and study. Oh. But she was really going to stay home and make out with her boyfriend.
I see.
That's what happened.
But was it that they were going to not get on the plane if they were going to go to the beach?
Yes.
That was my understanding. It was let's go to the beach or we're going to get on this flight for some reason.
I thought at the end of the movie, they go, we're going to go fly to the beach. And they're like, no, we can't fly to the beach.
I think that is what they said at the end.
I think that she just thought if she was on the plane with them or stopped. I mean, I don't know. I mean, because now she's creating a Final Destination situation where maybe now death will come after the parents.
But see, this is the issue I had with the film. There was no emotional journey for her. If she had somehow made the wrong decision in the beginning that caused her parents' death and then come back to make such a different decision.
Well, she came – the decision that she made was –
all she made was like, oh, don't get on the plane. But there was no –
oh, right. She just stopped them from...
She's still with Kevin.
She literally steals their, it seemed to me like their plane keys and runs away.
Her father says, give me back those keys.
And then she just ran away from the house. It wasn't like, I'm going to spend time with you. Yeah.
In a Laura Ashley,
onesie. It looked like Little House in the Prairie. Oh, my God.
We haven't explained that what we're talking about is at the end of the movie... After they save Eternia and defeat Skeletor, the weird little troll guy sends them back to Earth, but before Courtney Cox's parents have died. So they're still alive. So that's why she's... Anyway, who cares?
Well, so the movie obviously starts off, and for the beginning of it, we were looking at each other and going, I didn't understand what was going on. There is actually the dialogue. I pulled a clip of this dialogue here, which is just the nonsense words of this is like the dialogue in the first 5 minutes here.
Hey, man, I shall point 84 chromons to Moonrise at Grayskull. We better find the key and we better find it fast.
What's your plan?
When we find the key, Gwildor will set the coordinates for Grayskull. We'll use the element of surprise.
Oh, sure. We'll drop right into the throne room. Fight off 2,000 or 3,000 of Skeletor's crack troops, break into the force field, and free the sorceress.
Right.
If we're going to split up, we'd better synchronize our personal locators. You both ready? And
if you find the key, activate the sorceress.
Poor Dolph Lundgren. Poor Dolph Lundgren. I feel like all of his lines... They're like, okay, he can't say more than like 5 words in a row.
Well, here's
the buddy, you're going to do all the talking, other guy with a mustache.
Well, here's the thing, too. Apparently, he did not know English during this film.
Oh, and really?
Blake Harris, who's been writing our things, actually interviewed his person who coached him. He was not supposed to be, his voice was not supposed to be in the movie.
Oh, like Hercules in New York?
Yes, and they were going to give him, in his contract, he had 3 chances to dub it, and if it didn't work, then they would get another actor, but they always intended to get another actor. But then the movie lost all of its financing, and they were like, oh, we got to rush this out. So they didn't have time to redub the movie, so they just left it in.
Wow.
And that's where you get this performance. He was sweet. I mean, he was just like fresh off the boat. Body type
fresh
only.
Fresh off the boat on ABC?
Check it out.
It was so ADR.
That's very subtle marketing,
Paul. Hey, don't worry about it.
Paul, that is very subtle marketing.
I love that guy Mitch on the show. He's funny.
That is the character you play.
That's so funny. I didn't even think about that.
Wow. That is crass.
Well, it's weird. I mean, I don't know. I'll stay tuned after that to watch League on FXX. You're on that show, right?
Well, I don't know what you mean.
He-Man also disappears for a large chunk of the movie.
Well, that's the thing I wrote. I was like, there's a part of what I was shocked about was here's a movie about He-Man and the Masters of the Universe kind of mythology and all this stuff, but most of it takes place in suburban America on Main Street, where every once in a while a huge battle will break out between Skeletor's forces and He-Man and his guys. And there are never townspeople around anywhere.
Yeah.
Like a war is happening in their tiny town.
They also have
spaceships and everybody's dressed like Darth Vader.
And the music is very Star Wars.
Oh yeah.
They're ripping off Star Wars everywhere for no reason.
I mean, they are straight up black stormtroopers. I mean, they're just, instead of white stormtroopers, they're black stormtroopers. Yeah. That's it. There's no real difference to them.
Did anyone else feel also that we were getting set up for He-Man and Courtney Cox's character?
Yeah.
Yes.
To find love.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, I thought I so felt too.
That,
yeah.
In that first scene,
she seemed to have
an
issue with Kevin and.
It was like Kevin was a bad boyfriend, but he wasn't a bad boyfriend. He seemed to be a pretty good guy.
No, you know
who's
what,
really
though?
Into music.
Yeah. You know what, though, I didn't like was I didn't like the every time something happened to them, Kevin was like, okay, I'm in charge of it. You know, like they find, she's like, hey, look at this thing over here. And he's like, oh, cool, Japanese synthesizer. You stay here. I'm going to go take care of it. You stay in the school. You do, like she is consistently marginalized. And then at the end, He-Man is like, they have this big moment. She gets hit in battle. She takes the hit, like all this stuff. And He-Man is like, goodbye, Courtney Cox character. And then he says to Kevin, you take care of her. Like, come on, man.
And by the way, she also falls for the mirage of her dead mother.
Oh, whoa. Yeah. Big time.
How do you not know that there is sorcery going on there?
She bought it so quickly because her mom's like, she's
secret work.
Yeah, we've been doing secret work. It was not set up that her mom was like involved. Nope. It seemed like her mom could have been anything, but she's like, oh yeah, that makes sense. My mom was doing secret work, had to
actually,
fake her death.
That upset me. I mean, the whole thing with the parents, you know, it was pretty, I think, emotionally manipulative.
Yeah. You think?
Oh my god!
It's
just like I can't watch this. This is just.
I will tell you. I will tell you one thing that when we were in Skeletor's castle. By the way, I think Frank Langella is awesome in this movie, and clearly, I think just wrote his own. Like he made Skeletor this like Shakespearean villain.
Totally.
Like his speeches are amazing,
beautiful.
And
but
like
voice is amazing.
Didn't you feel like the Skeletor mask made him look like Jack Palance? At the beginning of the movie, I was like, oh, it's Jack Palance. And then I was like, oh, no, that's just the mask looks like Jack Palance. It's actually Frank Langella.
It's like how they took the William Shatner mask and made the Halloween mask.
Jason Voorhees.
So, this is like for Legend of Curly's Gold, and they just use it for Frank Langella.
Jason Voorhees.
I'm still not clear on what that machine does. Mm. Exactly.
The key.
Yeah. What it does and why he wanted it.
I didn't get any of it. I didn't get why the portal opened. I didn't know why now he's the master of the universe.
It actually seemed to me that the bigger deal was taking that sword and putting it in that special sword slot.
Oh, right.
The sword slot that had like a weird like alarm on it. Like little blinking light. Like doot, 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 doot. Like you can't take the sword out now.
Locked.
The thing that always gets me when I looked at Skeletor's castle is, you know, I think, you know, for movie sets, obviously you want it to be big and bold, but I didn't like how many balconies there were without railings. I felt that would be a very dangerous castle to work in. It was everything was too elevated.
Well, there's no children in the movie.
But so, still, I think like,
are you
it's like
just
being
saying
the edge
you
of
had
a building.
A couple drinks?
I just think I wouldn't want to be walking there and just, you know, if I'm texting or something, just walk off the side. Yeah. It's a poorly designed castle. But he was also in the Skeletor castle, which his throne was in front of the portal that allowed him to be the master of the universe. So it seemed like, I don't know if he was like just squatting on that or like, what? Because that
when
castle,
it opened up
when it opened
him?
Up him up, yeah, like it just seemed like.
Yeah, I wondered if that had always been
in
there.
The castle, like that portal opened up behind him, but it seemed like that was built into the castle.
Oh, yeah, maybe. I don't
understand that.
Also,
I didn't, yeah.
When he harnessed the power of the universe.
Yes.
His aim like went out the window hard. Like he was like all powerful, but just couldn't quite zap He-Man with the power of the universe.
But the power of the universe brings about one of the worst fight scenes I've ever seen. So much so that do it in the dark. The two leads finally fight in the dark, and it's like someone just like has a flashlight on them to show their like mediocre at best stunt work. Like, why not just get two pros in there? Like, Frank Langella is in a full mask. Mm. Dolph Lundgren is a monstery, huge, you know, bulked up guy. Like, just have one good fight. It's in the dark. It is literally in the dark. You have to squint back. I guess like through shadows, this is a pretty badass fight. Nothing.
I wanted to know more about the team, the He-Man team, because the old guy, Mustachio.
Oh, I wish his name was Mustachio.
So there's the old guy, and then there's the woman, and then there's the whatever his name is, the creature.
Gwildor or something.
Grildor. Grildor, who everyone loves. No matter what Grildor did, they're like,
oh, Grildor.
Yeah, they're laughing at him.
Yeah, did it again, Grildor.
I'm upset about that, though, because when they first got, when they first went through the portal and they ended up, I don't know, wherever they were, he was.
Next to the cow?
Yes, yeah. Next to the cow. That little creature had his face stuck in like a pond.
And he kind of became a dog. Like they were like, he was like, whoa, like shook himself up and they're like, whoa, Gildor.
And then they're laughing at him like, oh, you almost drowned.
Hysterically.
Well, it's basically like, oh, your arms don't work enough to even pick yourself up off the ground. You would drown face first in a puddle if we weren't able to get you because apparently your limbs aren't strong enough to remove you from the puddle.
That's really sad. That's really sad.
By the way, I mean, just to just draw one quick comparison here from my knowledge of He-Man as a child, I haven't really revisited, but He-Man's like sidekick was a character named Orko, who was like a wizard that you never saw his face. He wore like a hat, and he had like and he floated. And
didn't He-Man have some sort of animal with him too?
Like he had a tiger, cat. You're right.
Yeah.
Well, what about She-Ra?
That's a side character. Oh, I mean, okay. She's like she had her own show.
That's like the Red Sonja to his Conan.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which these two things are totally unrelated.
I thought they were a father.
To even bring up Conan the Barbarian in reference to He-Man would be almost impossible because what would they have in common?
I mean, they're so
different.
Different.
What about Conan? Conan in space? Oh, yeah, that works. We'll do Conan in space. We can't call it Conan. Okay, He-Man.
He-Man. Saying
they were father daughter. I don't think they were.
I think they were.
They were.
Yeah. No.
She, at one point, was like dad. Father.
Yeah.
Like,
right. Yeah.
Really.
Like, side note. Weird. Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm. And by the way, what was the side plot of her being a vegetarian?
They all were.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
On the planet, I think in the future. Everyone's a vegetarian.
Why not set that up just like the smallest amount, like just so we can get a little bit like wow, they do things weird here. They didn't seem to be like surprised at anything.
They're eating ribs.
Everybody's eating meat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In this movie.
Wherever they're from, when they get to Earth, they find ribs.
Their first mission is to get food. They use a giant grappling hook to steal someone's ribs out of the backseat of their car.
While they're making out.
Yeah. And then Grildor doesn't know how to eat ribs, so he just drinks the barbecue sauce down.
I was so worried about that actor because all I could think of was like the gravy always being in his mask. Just sitting in the pocket of his face.
Another costume thing. The guy who played Beastman in this, his teeth were so large that he was unable to close his mouth. So when he would just drool, he would just drool down his costume and just weigh him down. Like apparently, like,
the added weight of drool. He's like, I have 3 quarts of drool in my boots right now.
And then the other guy, the dad, or we think the dad, he also had a lot of sweat in his boots, and he said that every day he would dump out sweat from his boots because like, it was the costumes were so confined.
He was wearing what looked like a children's Halloween costume of Spaceman.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he was wearing utter nonsense Mustachio.
And she was wearing a metal thong.
I mean,
did anybody notice that?
That was the only thing I was cool with in this movie.
Very practical.
I don't understand why He-Man, and again, if we're going to this idea that.
I did think He-Man looked great.
All right.
So oily.
But I think he's a beautiful man.
He looks like Killian Murphy.
Oh,
did anybody else think that?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's interesting because there's a picture of Killian Murphy, and I actually look a lot like him. And when my dad saw the movie Sunshine,
he looked like Killian Murphy.
Yeah.
Your dad thought you were the actor Killian Murphy? I was, first of all, the lead of like a major motion picture.
And had never mentioned it.
That he just happened to see in the movies one day. So that's its own story. But he thought that I was the lead of the movie.
By the way, I'm just pulling up a picture of this to show.
That's now, a man.
I'm now realizing.
There is some sort of similarity. Yeah. When I was a brunette, there was.
When I was a brunette, it was possible that I might have been confused with Cillian Murphy. Is the what you're positing?
By my father.
Yeah, by your father. The person who arguably knows you best.
Sweetheart, I've just seen the entire movie that you're in. I loved it. That's crazy. What?
I know. It is crazy. It is crazy. I mean,
and your dad have very interesting theories on movies.
I know people make fun of their parents like, oh, my dad calls Matt Damien, like those kind of like disconnects. Sure. But my dad thought that I was a male actor who was the lead of a movie playing a male character.
And wait, so did he think you were like having a separate male career that you were like, you couldn't talk about?
Why didn't she tell me she was the lead of this movie?
His knowledge of things, like, he's just like, well, I know you're in movies and TV. Like, why couldn't it be you? In some ways, I took it as a compliment.
Sure.
Because I think he thinks that should be me.
Sure.
Maybe it is. And he heard me talking about stuff. Maybe this is the project.
Oh my God, I love that.
This is the project. This project where you're playing a man.
It also goes to show your dad. Your dad might have just like. My question is: did your dad think that Cillian Murphy was a woman that entire movie? Would that make his rewatching of it interesting? Because if he thought it was you, he may have a whole different.
I thought it was a female character. I just didn't understand why they called the main woman in the movie Mike.
Oh my gosh.
That is unbelievable.
That's so outrageous.
The idea of your dad watching it and be like, oh, June!
He also gets really caught up on, like, do you remember when he saw The Departed? And he was so upset because he felt like all the actors looked exactly the same. Like, he feels that.
Your dad might suffer from face blindness.
Face blindness, yeah.
He feels that they should look so different because otherwise he can't follow.
Well, the good news with this movie is that he would have no problem because they're so diverse, these characters. Karg.
Karg. I wrote Karg is my favorite.
Karg, me too. Karg.
Karg, exclamation.
Yes.
I have a Karg.
You spelled it with a C. I spelled it with a K.
Oh,
I wrote Karg leader question mark. Like this, the smallest, most diminutive character of this entire world. Like, and you're their leader. He's like, go, get them. Like,
he's like the head of the bounty hunters or whatever. They have like a straight from Star Wars introduction of the, you know, when they introduce the bounty hunters on the
Frogman, Beastman,
and they do it
robot.
Here too. Here are the bounty hunters, and each and every one of them are ludicrous.
Yes,
Frogman's costume was amazing.
That was great.
And I was like, why did he get killed off so fast? Everyone else's mask is like restrictive; you can't tell their mouth is moving.
Oh, they should have killed Beastman. Instantly.
Immediately.
They just put ammonia in his face. By the way.
Where did that ammonia come from? Why was there ammonia at a high school grad?
Well, by the way, that's minutes before they just have a fight in an abandoned box factory. Like, they run out of the school and they're just in just a place with empty boxes. Just everyone's getting tossed.
See, I thought for sure that when I saw that the senior ball was the theme was the fantasy, I thought for sure we were going to do like a really cool sequence where these fantastical characters were kind of in the sets and and that just never happened.
Yeah, that's a missed opportunity.
Well, I mean,
a real misstep.
Well, I think it was probably extras casting. They just didn't have anybody. Like,
because
it's
no
like
extras
she's,
in this movie.
She's leaving before the senior dance or whatever.
Or graduation.
Yeah, and it didn't make any sense, but yet she's like, she go to the sound check and she's like, just let me be here for a second. Like,
yeah, Courtney Cox is, yeah, go ahead.
No, the sound check was a solo sound check.
Yeah.
At night, no one checking the sound.
Just him basically
just like
pre-hooking up his instruments. Like, I'll leave this here for tomorrow night. Tomorrow night we'll really get into it.
And then vibing on the little Japanese synthesizer.
And by the way, by himself. Like, so was he just sound checking for, like, he seemed to just play keyboards.
I don't know. Can you sound check on your own or you need someone else to?
You need somebody in the back to be like raising levels.
Give me more. Give me more in the monitor.
And by the way, this is their last date. Like, this was set up as their last date.
To drive her to the airport or whatever.
And she's like, let me go to the gravesite. Let's do your sound check and then I'll leave forever. That was a real romance.
In the middle of that, she's like, he's like, you know what? Even though you're about to leave, I'm going to bring this Japanese synthesizer that fell from the sky down to Charlie's to see what he thinks of it. let's not do that together. She's like, I'm going to stay here and say goodbye to the school or whatever. So they split apart for a part of this last hour on Earth.
Yeah.
By the way, also note that she has not packed up her parents' house. Like, her plan seems to have been to just leave it.
Yeah.
To just simply walk away.
Incredible Hulk style, duffel bag, get out of there.
Hey, everybody, let's take a quick break for a word from our sponsors. Oh, boy, what do we got here? This is DraftKings. Let me tell you about DraftKings. DraftKings are for all those people who love fantasy football but hate the wait. Why do you have to wait 16 weeks to get a payout? Okay, DraftKings is the one-week fantasy site. Wait, what? That's right. You pick a team every week. New team, new players. You get in the mix, and then you get some cash. And DraftKings is crowning new millionaires every single week, okay? This is not fantasy as usual. This is DraftKings. So you're welcome to the big time, okay? Get rid of your old analog fantasy. Get into your son's fantasy. Fantasy is my dad. DraftKings, my son. My son's cool. He likes to fuck. And DraftKings totally likes to fuck. But that's not what they're doing. They're actually getting you money. So hurry to DraftKings.com right now. Use the promo code MADE, M-A-D-E, to play for free with your first deposit in this Sunday's $1 million fantasy football contest, where first place takes home $100,000. Hear that? First place takes home $100,000. You can get in that right now. Go right there, right now, DraftKings.com. Enter MADE, M-A-D-E, for free entry now at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. No season-long commitments. Week-to-week fantasy. Okay, admit it. The last thing anyone wants to do after work, after you come home from working your ass off, you're underappreciated, that guy Ted is always taking your shit, is wait in line at the grocery store, schlepping home and cooking a complicated meal. You got to get the book down. You got to look at the book. You got to go online. How much is this? I don't know. They don't have it. It's expensive. Takeout, unhealthy. What can you do? Can you guess? Say it with me, Blue Apron. Blue Apron comes in and goes, hey man, we're going to give you a farm fresh meal with delicious ingredients, step-by-step recipes. We're going to deliver it to your house so you can create healthy and handcrafted meals at home without going to the grocery store for less than $10 a meal. What? Get the fuck out of here. Yes, Blue Apron sends you fresh ingredients, perfectly proportioned, making cooking healthy meals really easy and fun. No trips to the grocery store and no waste from unused ingredients. You don't have to clean out your fridge in a month and go, why do I have this in here? No. Blue Apron is perfect for date night, cooking with friends, and they even offer family plans with kid-friendly ingredients so the whole family can eat well and have fun. Guys, this is the future we have been promised. Each meal is balanced at 5 to 700 calories per serving, so tasty that you would never even know that. Cooking takes less than a half an hour, shipping is flexible and free, and the menus are always new. They won't send you the same meal twice. They work around your schedule and dietary preferences, and Blue Apron's experts source only the best seasonal ingredients for incredible meals. Here, look, this is what I got coming up right now. Chicken, mushroom, and broccoli, tetrazzini with Parmesan breadcrumbs. Ooh, oh, look at this one too. This one here. Spinach ricotta stuffed shells with tomato sauce and romaine salad. You're going to make it. Yeah, you're making that shit. You cook incredible meals and you'll be blown away by the quality and the freshness. Blue Apron, it's a better way to cook. Check out this week's menu and get your first two meals free by going to blueapron.com/bonkers. That's B-O-N-K-E-R-S. blueapron.com/bonkers. I'm being totally serious. The first two meals are on me when you go to blueapron.com/bonkers.
Oh, I think you're reading way more into this.
Mm. No, yeah. I actually think what it is that what they need is something that he happens to be able to do. Like, he has a secret tool that they need. He can remember a song because he's a musician. He's
but
a keyboard player in a band.
It wasn't in this clip, but at one point he says to the creature, to the little troll
Grildor?
Man. Grildor,
I don't know.
Gwildemore, he says to him...
Gryffindor. I think it's Gryffindor.
Yeah,
I
wrote it. He says to Glendale. Glendale Galleria.
He says to Glenn Close.
He he says to Gwyneth Paltrow, you know, I'm scared to do it. I'm nervous to do it.
Yeah. That's about their first time having sex, though. Everybody else thinks that Kevin and Grildor are totally doing it.
That would
right?
be the sequel that they find love.
Yeah. Grildor, are you kidding? That dude is hot.
By the way, also.
And good to go.
Grildor's a party guy.
Little dude.
He can make a car in an instant. He finds funny props and costumes.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He-Man,
for a solid 40 minutes of this movie, He-Man is driving around suburban America in a 1958 Ford Impala.
like a pink Ford Impala.
Like, it's crazy.
With like a neon light on the back.
Yes.
And there's no seeming need for it.
No,
they don't travel any distance.
It doesn't make them faster. It doesn't make them do anything.
No, they can't chase it. But all at the end, they kind of drive through a portal.
Like, Skeletor has fucking spaceships. He's driving down Main Street, Little America, so like small town America, in a spaceship.
By the way, one of my favorite scenes in the entire movie, Skeletor is on a giant open air spaceship akin to a parade float.
Yeah.
The good guys are like hiding out on a roof, and it's a big sneaker upper moment because Skeletor just rises up above them, but he's that's giant. That's like a plane landing on your head. They're, ooh, where did you come from?
Why are they on the roof? There's been so much airplay.
Oh, yeah,
like so many people attacking from the air. They're like, where do we go? The roof.
Let's go up.
I think they go to the roof because that's the only way that the spaceship can appear to be flying.
Right.
Because it's the perspective of the people on the roof. So it's just being held up by like a forklift or whatever. So it looks like
that. By the way, it does raise and lower like a forklift. Yeah. And they just rip off Back to the Future in this with their hoverboards. They have like hover discs and people are flying around, which goes to one of my theories. Whenever we do movies like this, there's always like a theory of like, or for me, my theory is that when a bad movie is here, it's those flying, like anything that's a hoverboard or a skateboard. Whenever there's a scene like that, they're like, kids will like this. We'll get them on a hover thing. Like, but it's like He-Man precariously on this like little hover thing. It was not even.
it didn't look cool.
He didn't look cool at all. Nope. He was so stiff.
Just stiff on this like little thing that looked like it was going to teeter over. Like, oh, get off it. Just run down the street.
Just run. You're like He-Man.
And again, I just want to bring up this one thing about He-Man and his costume. Yes, I'm sure he looks great, but. He
looks a lot like me because he looks like me. I think he's an attractive guy. I need to do my own horn, but
you did at one point just exclaim, "He's sexy."
What about Dolph Lundgren? He's not sexy. I will give you. He's good looking. He's handsome.
He's
his body is amazing.
Guy.
But he's not sexy at all.
Okay.
What is his deal? Where is he from? I don't know anything about
him. He's an MIT grad, so he's a super smart mathematician. That is the truth.
Yes.
He is from Sweden, and those are the two facts I know about him: is that he's super smart, and
is he just famous for He-Man? Is that
Rocky?
No, he
Rocky
was the,
Four.
He was like the Russian who fought Ivan Dragov, right?
Okay. Drago.
Drago. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So I think that was his big claim to fame was like Rocky Four.
He became a kind of B actor in like these kind of big action. He was like one of the original Punishers.
But he's done
a bunch of that kind of stuff.
So it was Rocky Four, Masters of the Universe. And then, like, I think Red Scorpion was a big movie, and then it's all just been, like, it just was a lot of, like, Men of War, Hidden Assassin, Silent Trigger, Blackjack, The Minion. So he's just become
that guy.
Even those titles are perfectly generic.
Oh, yeah.
The Trigger.
Uh-oh, guys, I just saw this. This is in post-production for Dolph. Kindergarten Cop 2.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah. Oh, he's also in the new Coen Brothers movie, Hail Caesar. So that's interesting.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Good for him.
Can we talk about the cop?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
And, like,
yes. Lubick.
His,
amazing.
Incredible performance. Like the most tics I've ever seen an actor do.
This is amazing.
So much tongue work.
This is the for those of you who don't know, this is the principal from Back to the Future. This is Strickland from Back to the Future playing a very similar character in this.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, he...
Okay,
this cop
is
bananas.
This is my first question about the cop. Where do you think the movie is set? Like, where in America?
Because his accent.
He's a New York cop.
Yeah.
He's got
and he's dressed like a New York cop.
He's dressed in a very long leather trench coat.
Yeah.
And he has a thick Bronx New York accent.
Yeah. I'm going to guess it's like middle America. I'm going
to
guess like Ohio.
Absolutely.
Or,
Indiana. Where did he come from?
I mean, it seemed like small town USA.
Wait, are we just naming states?
Oh boy. Okay.
This is like you guys are playing a really boring game of password.
Pennsylvania.
Illinois. Oh God.
It's every town
Nebraska.
USA. But by the way, his energy and attitude is
that's the South.
His energy and attitude is of a real beaten down New York cop. Like, all right, come over here. Yeah. I got dead kids in there.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. You're coming with me.
Like, where he should have been, the cop of, I've never dealt with this. What's going on?
It should be like Andy Griffith. It should be just like, this never happens here. And instead he's like, all right, you're coming downtown.
In the middle, I wrote like, I was like, who am I rooting for here? Who's the dick? Is it the cop or the boyfriend? Because they both come at each other hard, aggressively hard.
Yeah.
But
she's amazing.
Name of a porno I've recently watched.
My favorite was when he saw the thing, the key thing,
the
do its thing.
Yeah.
And we just had this, the best reaction shot in a movie I've ever seen was just him like, tongue wriggling around in his mouth, then like hand on face, like twitching around. Like he just did every move,
every choice he made,
and they just let it. Like, it was the longest shot of the movie. They let it live on him. They're like, this sustains itself.
Yeah. Or keep on going.
Oh my God, I loved it.
Just
he did everything he could do. Yeah.
Everything.
Like, really? You know that like panic if you're shooting something and you like no one's calling cut. You're like, I guess I'll keep on going. Like turning his own tie to spin like and he goes like he's really suspect of everybody until the end of the movie. Can we just hear this is my favorite finding my favorite part. So they the day is saved, Skeletor is defeated.
Oh well, they go from Earth back to Eternia
in the Impala.
The cop comes with them.
Yes. He's now fighting with laser guns too.
Yeah.
And just picked up a laser gun.
Yep.
Town. By the way, the town has been kind of destroyed, or at least the
town
guitar
has
shop
definitely been destroyed.
Oh, guitar shop.
That guitar shop.
Charlie. P.S. One of my favorite characters in cinema.
Yeah, I
love
that.
It's just like the wacky buddy Charlie, who's like wearing every piece of clothing you could possibly wear, like leather hats.
Yes, he's wearing all like the accessories.
Baseball jacket.
Yeah. To him. They're
like he looks like Paul Schaefer from the early '80s. Like that kind of like I'm wearing everything. I'm a musician, man. It's cool. And his shop oddly has like police scanners and then just a lot of keyboards. Like, oh, my keyboards. Like he literally says,
so
I think my keyboards.
Why does he have a police scanner there?
Why does he have a shotgun behind the front? They're like, you got a shotgun, because right? Charlie was like,
it's small town America. Everybody's robbing the music store.
Lubick says it so like he's like, you know, if someone comes in and causes trouble, you got a gun. Yeah. and he seemed to be of the age of the teenagers. Like he didn't seem
Lubick?
Charlie. He didn't seem like it, but it was established that he owned that place. Mm-hmm. But
there was a neon sign
age.
That said Charlie's.
let's take a listen to this. So at the end of the movie, like,
so we know he can afford neon, which is no joke.
We kind of forget about Lubick for a second, and this is what happens. They see him on the throne, now dressed in Eternia garb, and here we go.
Well, Lubick, look at you. So you're really going to stay here, huh?
What, are you kidding? What am I going to go back there for? And look what I got here. I got a castle. I got a view. I got clean air. I got a beautiful woman. Huh?
By the way,
kind of retirement, huh?
Huh? He gets the castle? Like, that's the other thing, too. Like, who's giving every... Like, this guy did very little in the grand scheme of things.
He's basically Bronn from Game of Thrones. He's like an assassin who's been given, like, you gotta marry that girl, you're gonna get that castle. Like, who knows? You're that guy.
I don't have faith in that relationship. He's like, I got a girlfriend? Like, when?
I got a woman? Yeah.
In this 5 minutes of after the fight, you gotta go...
Why would I go back there? It's, small town America? Come on, I got a castle. Huh?
I got a this view. Girl. I got a view. The view seemingly from that castle was terrible.
Yeah.
It was a gross, like, dead landscape. Yes.
Fresh air.
By the way, I think something might have been wrong with that guy, because there's another scene earlier where he's walking with the rest of his police team.
Yeah, he's trying to convince them that something crazy is happening.
Right. And they're, but I don't understand why he never enlists them, why he doesn't enlist them earlier.
They don't. Oh, because I think he's a lone wolf. I think he's like a Serpico. Mm. I think he's just, he doesn't know what's going on. First of all, he doesn't know what's going on. There's just, there's been the fire at the school. Mm. He's investigating an arson. you know, what they think.
Well, no, and the custodian has also been attacked.
Oh, the custodian. What happened? He goes, he says, I can never tell you. Or
yeah,
like,
you could never know.
Yeah, you could never know. That's not a good attack. You should be like,
no, people should know.
Monsters
were people should know there are monsters.
And then the cop just went to, what's his face? Kevin's house. And then they just started kind of having snacks. Oh, right.
That's Julia's house. And I found it very odd that she called her own home.
Yeah,
her own home, which full of Burger King cups, oddly placed Burger King cups.
That is true. Why does she call her house? Because her parents are straight up Deadsville.
Yeah, there's someone there.
And why did he pretend she wasn't alive? Why did he hide that from the cop?
To what end?
Yeah, like, because what did that? What was the cop? The cop would have.
That was like a scene.
Did you think that he thought that like maybe she killed the janitor and lit the place on fire?
Right.
Like I mean, well, like if
and
that's
he was going to help her escape.
Yeah.
Like he was like, I don't know why you did it, babe, but I know it was right. So I'll meet you. The janitor's
dead. A good boyfriend. He's covering for her. Like that's like the beginning of Fargo or something. Like he's just covering.
That's so true. Like he has no reason to lie about her being alive. Which is his main concern.
Yeah.
He must. He would be like, hooray, you're alive.
Let's tell the cops.
But why does Lubick is so suspicious of Kevin immediately, as if Kevin is like the worst kid in the world.
And there, it just, I mean, really, we're talking about an 18-year-old kid, like a young kid, like not an arsonist who's destroyed this. I mean,
and also, he's also run into the crime scene to try to figure out what's going on. Like, had he done something, I doubt he would be there.
Well, a lot of times people who commit crimes stick around.
You know what?
Just to
You're
see.
Right. To see what they've done.
Yeah.
I've seen Seven. That's true. I just want to talk about
Spoiler alert for Seven.
I do want to talk about this. The core concept of this movie in general is that they're after a device that is a key, like essentially a keyboard, a circular keyboard that opens portals. That's like the whole movie is the confusion of that as a musical instrument versus a powerful tool. Like
that's the thing. How is this whole He-Man movie? Again, we're talking so little about He-Man. How is this whole He-Man movie about the key, about this keyboard thing?
And when the little troll uses it, he types on it as if like you're miming, like the worst extra work in the background. Like I'm typing, like quick, not even looking, like and then when the evil evil Lara like has it, or she's like very gentle, like boop 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 boop. Everyone uses it differently, and it seems. And then the other people are playing
but I think
it.
Grilldor invented it,
but Grilldor seems to be the least effective. He's like,
but he's like, but Grilldor, exactly. Grilldor invented it, but cannot seem to use it.
And
he doesn't remember the tunes,
but it seems like.
Inventing like, a keyboard, a piano rather, and being like, but I don't know what it does.
He basically says the universe is all music. That's how they, and so at the end of the movie to get the wormhole to open, they just kind of hook up a keyboard and that guy just plays the tune, which Grilldor should know because he fucking created it.
Yeah.
And then the thing opens.
Because he would have had to program it. And be like, okay, so this sequence opens that kind of a wormhole.
Totally.
And I guess the thought being that, well, if I don't have those specific 90 keys, I can't program it. I can, like...
Who knows? And by the way, Skeletor has one of these keys as well.
Yeah, what? What?
Yeah, that was crazy.
So there's just fucking
rotten. This planet is rotten with keys.
Well, yeah, when he came into Earth with the key, I was like, he's got it?
He's got one too, don't they all just jam out? I mean, like, why don't they just, they might as well just form a band where they're playing these nonsense things. It's garbage.
So Skeletor at one point goes, if I don't have everything, I have nothing.
Yes.
So is it just that he just wants...
Such an existential
dilemma.
It was
a beautiful, beautiful line.
I mean, there's, by the way, a lot of poetry in this movie. They also, live the journey,
because
every destination is a door to another adventure.
I thought that theme, well, here's my pitch for a better ending to this movie.
Oh,
because I did actually like the idea of we don't say goodbye, we say good journey. So what I thought was going to happen, I did like that idea. And I did cry, you know, when...
There was a lot of crying. There was some pretty intense. Yeah.
When did you cry?
I cried a little bit
when Lubick got his cast.
Yeah,
on.
I was like, finally.
When did you cry?
Okay.
But, I'll take that. That was emotional.
It was emotional, but I actually
you were crying through the credits. So you really
I cried
got
hysterically through the credits. But what I wish had happened, I think, would have made it a better movie, is if she came home, waking up in that, you know. In her nightgown,
onesie.
And came downstairs, and they weren't there,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
and they were dead,
mm-hmm.
still dead. But what she would have come to is that she doesn't have a chance to say goodbye. I mean, I might start crying. But but what she's now able to say to that is good journey. Because she knows that in a bigger sense, she will get to see them again on this journey. That would have been, to me, that's like, that's
it's really beautiful. Would you rather have that than her flying, hurtling through space and time and grabbing them out of an airplane?
Well, no, I thought that was going to happen. I thought we were headed there, and that's why they were on the plane. But in place of that, I think there's an opportunity for an ending where they're not there. And she, because she is really struggling with her grief during this movie.
Sure.
And seeing that mirage of her mom, I mean, I'm very scared of mirages in general. When I saw
I'm very scared of mirages, in general.
When I saw that, I was like, don't go over there. Don't go over there. Oh, and I realized, like, oh, fuck, I'm scared of mirages. But
this movie made you realize this was an epiphany for you. And this movie caused a real realization for you of I am afraid, scared of mirages.
Whenever I see it in movies and films and television.
How much are you seeing mirages in?
Not often.
Desert movies. How do you feel about
Mirage E.P. Henson? What?
I mean, I will not go into the Mirage in Vegas. It's terrifying.
Oh, of course not. Well, there's nothing inside there. It's all an illusion.
But I do think there would have been a better ending to the movie. Because that actually, as an idea, we don't say goodbye, we say good journey, was interesting to me.
Mm.
Sure.
Mm. And but wasn't, because then at the end when her parents were there, it was just like, oh, okay, I guess you get to be with them again.
That was the thing is, like, they're saying goodbye on the other planet. What's it called? He-Man's planet? Whatever. They're saying goodbye. Grildor is about to send them through the portal. And they're like, okay, good journey, good journey. Everybody's all upset. Everybody's waving, good journey, okay. And then just as they're about to go through the portal, Courtney Cox is like, oh, wait a minute, Grildor, can you? And then zap, they get zapped through. So like I'm assuming she was going to say, will you send me back to before my parents die?
Yeah.
But like it was almost an afterthought on her part, which I thought was weird. And then her wish is granted in a weird way.
Well, because Grildor knows what's up.
Because Grildor's dialed in to what her journey is.
But see, this is the weird thing about time travel. Time travel as a concept is not really introduced.
Until that moment.
Until that moment. Yeah.
Is it?
Yes, where Grildor says,
I thought they were going laterally. Yeah,
traveling in time.
No, and then Grildor at the end says, I can send you any place in space and time.
By the way,
Grildor.
That was great Grildor.
I didn't even know I was going to do it.
Were you Grildor?
I didn't even know I was. Yeah, I didn't know I had it in me.
Remake, wow. Jason. Let's be Grildor.
Call me owners of the franchise, Masters of
Gary
the
Goddard.
By the way, there was a sequel written that was never shot.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah, this movie also shut down 3 days before it was supposed to end production. So that's why maybe some of the plot holes are not all tied together.
Jimi Hendrix. They played Jimi Hendrix in this movie.
What?
Really?
Yes.
What do you mean?
In Charlie's Music Store, there Hendrix is playing.
Whoa.
That's right.
And they have the song Living in a Box. I'm a living in a box. I'm a living in a cardboard box. I'm a living in a box. Remember that song? Terrible, terrible. No. Oh, guys.
What is that
song? I don't
know
what's happening.
You guys
right
are
now
all too young. It's like a terrible.
There's a song called I'm Living in a Box.
I'm Living in a Box.
It's a terrible song.
It was like the equivalent of like, you remember Walk the Dinosaur?
Yeah,
it was not was
dinosaur.
I feel like it was like that kind of a song, but maybe 10 years earlier.
What is the song about?
Living in a box, living in a cardboard box. Maybe it's about a homeless person. I don't know.
Gross, frankly. Gross people.
Gross people can't afford planes.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah. Oh my gosh,
that song was playing, and I was like, oh my god, remember this song? But that made me think like they must have spent money. Because that song was a hit. They must have spent money buying music.
Well, you know, there's actually a great documentary about all these films that Brett Ratner produced. It's Masters of the Universe. It's Superman IV, The Quest for Peace, the Golden or Globus, whatever these guys are. They just made these insane movies, and it was just like these. It's a great documentary. I think it's coming out in a week now on like digital. But it's like the history of this studio that was just like, fuck it. Like, well, there's like, they just everything, because this is a movie written by someone who's like, yeah, yeah, we got that name. All right. It has nothing to do with it. It's like just white guys in a room going, yeah, yeah. And kids, and the kids are like, that they're kids in here, and He-Man, forget it all. Like, there's nothing to tie the kids who love the comic. And this happens all the time, like Mario Brothers or Super Mario. It's like, it's like, oh, yeah, let's not take, get them out of there. Put them in the world. It's like, it makes no sense. I want to just play, just for this two clips that I love. This is just Dolph and the chemistry that he has with Courtney Cox. This is, and this, you kind of catch the phonetic English that's going
on. Dolph Lundgren appears to exist separate from everybody else in the movie. Yeah. Everybody else seems to have relationships with each other.
They had to like set up
Kevin shots and Courtney Cox, the mustachio and his
daughter.
Daughter. Everybody's teamed up. Dolph Lundgren just is like floating in the ether almost.
Here's Dolph in his English.
It's all right. It's all right. Don't be afraid. I won't hurt you. Now, what are you running from?
That's all.
I'm running from these monsters.
Courtney Cox is adorable in this movie.
She's got to do a lot.
So cute.
By the way, like, that I think is a tough role to pull off. And I'm sure it's like one of her earliest roles, too. It's like, she's got to go from like,
oh, yeah.
Like, she's got death in the family. She's running from aliens. She's fighting. She's, you know, like, she's got
I loved her in this movie.
I thought it was great.
I was like very on board for Courtney Cox and the kid who plays Kevin. I thought
he was great.
I thought it was really interesting because they were basically. Yeah. Those kids that were basically in an 80s teen movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And everybody else is in some fucking weird nonsense.
Well, that's like the kind of the fun world of it. It's like they're like, we got this teen movie and we'll just throw in this other thing. It's kind of like this weird mashup.
Hey, everybody. Sorry to interrupt the show, but we have one more thanks to our sponsors and then we'll get right back into it. Look, we talked about this earlier. Life is full of mysteries. I mean, can you still call version 17 of a movie a sequel? Or how do movies about sharks and a tornado get made three different times? Or what is disodium insonate and gorallate? And why does it end up in a typical fast food chicken? We don't know, okay? What I do know is that Chipotle doesn't gorallate their chicken. No, they serve incredible chicken that's been marinated overnight in smoky, spicy chipotle pepper adobo sauce, and then they grill it to perfection in a smoking hot plancha. Yes, I said plancha. Then they put that incredible chicken in a burrito, taco, bowl, or salad with fajita veggies, fresh tomato salsa, romaine lettuce, and a blend of Monterey Jack and cheddar cheeses, and Chipotle's amazing hand-mashed guacamole. I love their guac. And you watch them make it in the back. Ooh, so good. It's guaranteed to blow your mind. Literally, your mind will be blown. And then they have to mop it up. And they're very good at mopping up at Chipotle. It's guaranteed not to have disodium in a what? I don't even know how to pronounce it, okay? Basically, Chipotle, real chickens, real seasonings, really, really good. So, finally, get food without the questions. Chipotle.
Well, obviously we had opinions about this movie. There are other people out there that had a different opinion. It is now time for Second Opinions.
Second Opinions! From top to bottom, crazy movies.
I thought we retired this one.
You know, this
is like,
we got to take the ones from...
This is seizure-induced.
We can pull it out.
Second Opinions for everyone.
We got to take the Amazon.
I feel like blood is going to come out of my ears and nose. There's just so much going on. It's like a cacophony of nonsense.
I will say, when I scour Amazon for these second opinions, it's easy to pull some out. This was hard. There were like 500 five-star reviews for this movie. Yeah. A lot of love for Masters. But here's
is that what we're calling it now? Masters?
Yeah, for Masters.
Sure. A lot of love for Masters.
A lot of love for Masters.
Is that just what we're doing?
That's
we're
going to
be
is.
Okay with
it's Masters.
A lot of love for Masters. Oh, what'd you guys do on the show this week? Masters. Masters. Oh, total classic rock.
This is from Marissa, and it is the title of it is ... awesome gift from my mom. And here it goes. Awesome gift from my mom. She loves this movie. I'm glad it's available on DVD. 5 stars.
She mom loves this movie?
Mom loves it. Awesome gift from my mom. So that's if everyone wants to give their mom a gift that keeps on giving. Okay, here we go. This is this is by plebes. I always thought that little dwarf snagged the bucket of chicken. I know 5 stars should be reserved for the unblemished, and I'm aware that they stole embarrassingly from Star Wars, and that there's a villain sporting a white shawl, not to mention all the big dog critics who snubbed their noses. But I think this film is one of the best superhero fantasy movies out there. And when Evil Lyn wanted to break the promise and Skeletor wouldn't let her, genius. Pure genius. What? 5 stars. This is like almost, that is unedited, just train of thought.
So, oh, and just to make sure, because I did want to mention it earlier, Skeletor's sidekick is a woman named, not Evelyn, not Evelyn, Evil Lyn. Hyphen Lyn.
I don't know why that article or that that review starts off with, I always thought the little dwarf snagged the bucket of...
Yeah, well, that,
he obviously does.
Yeah, there's
that was
no,
like a point of contention.
No debate. Yeah.
Debate, well, debate.
Finally, this release settles it.
Yeah. Finally, they attack it in the movie.
It's basically like, did Greedo shoot first?
Yeah. okay, this is from E.M. Woodfill, Eileen Woodfill, written in 1999. I think this is the best movie I've seen in science fiction. I mean, this movie is exciting. I don't get the part that the bad guys needed the key if they already had the key. That part doesn't make sense to me. But she wrote, that part doesn't make sense to me. My favorite part is when Courtney Cox is Julie. By the way, of course it's Julie. Like, yeah. That's the only character
that's
she plays.
My favorite part
that's
is when
part.
Courtney.
Well, no,
I'm gonna
finish.
Julie?
My favorite part is when Courtney Cox as Julie gets hit by Skeletor poison. One more part where Skeletor and He-Man had their battle at the end. That's the review. So her two favorite parts is when Courtney Cox's Julie gets hit by Skeletor poison, and one more part where Skeletor and He-Man had their battle.
The only way that would make sense is if at the very end that person was like, I am 5 years old.
Yeah.
Like... You know what I mean? Like, if that if an adult wrote that, shame. Shame on you.
This is a movie to me. I know I've talked about these types of movies before where I would just, as a child, you'd watch a movie that was on TV because you want to watch a movie.
Yeah, on TV.
You want to watch a movie on TV. So I would find myself watching a movie like this, and it would be great because it was just simply...
A movie.
Something
to watch,
simply a movie.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, it was great.
For as
I get that.
In regards to something to watch, it really
paid off. That's great to watch something.
There's a lot of things that fall into that category for me that are like movies that, in my mind, I still think are awesome because they were on like a Sunday afternoon on Channel 56, and I was like, fuck yeah.
I remember seeing Mixed Nuts with Steve Martin. It still remains one of my favorite movies because I saw it as a child and was one of the only VHS tapes we had, and so I watched it over and over and over again because I was just so excited that it was a movie that I could see.
Yeah, I remember the first kid in our neighborhood, in my town, I feel like, but no, not in my area, to get a VCR only had 2 tapes, and they were Grease.
Everybody had Grease on VHS. Why is that?
I think VHS and Grease were the same time.
They are
like, VHS was created for VHS Grease.
VHS came about, exactly.
A huge step in technology was created.
Travolta was like, hey, you know, I got an idea. What if we... No, I think they just came to market at the same time, and so Grease profited from that. The other one, though, was the Burt Reynolds movie Hooper.
Oh,
Hooper,
yeah.
What's that?
Where he jump? It's a car jumping movie. It's like all he does is like jump cars off of bridges. It's nonsense.
It's a stuntman written and directed movie. Yeah. It's
awesome. Yeah. I think it's awesome, but it might be terrible.
I know. Well, the movie I watched as a kid all the time was not Brewster's Millions, The Toy.
The Toy, yeah.
The Toy was one I watched
all
the time.
That's a very weird movie.
Yeah.
I also watched Grease 2, always on VHS, Mixed Nuts, and Regarding Henry.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
Which we happened to have on VHS.
J.J. Abrams' first script?
Yeah.
I was Turtles 2.
Yeah. Turtles 2. That was yours.
Yeah.
Really?
Like, I can't tell you Turtles how many times
Ooze?
I've seen that movie.
Secrets of the Ooze?
Yeah, this is how this connection has happened.
UK, I remember
now.
I can
quote, like, the impact sounds of, like, the fight scenes.
What?
Like, wow. I know it so well.
I would love it if just to, like, be watching it with you and for you to be not only reciting all the dialogue word for word, but then being like, psh.
No, I've sat down and watched it with my boyfriend and he's like, shut up. Because I kind of want him to know that I know all these sounds, but at the same time, it's the most irritating thing. That
I used to record movies on cassette tape and then listen to them in a headset. So I would memorize movies and there are... I know. Beverly Hills Cop, I can pretty much do verbatim.
Really?
I should do a one-man show, Beverly Hills Cop.
Absolutely.
That would be amazing.
You would
can we put
them on
our shows at, like, let's do, like, a night amazing. Of, like... one just person like, shows.
I would love that. Full just acting it
you
out.
Should do a show in which you get you two and a couple of more people, and you have to whoever it's a competition show. Who can go the longest, perfectly reciting dialogue from the movie?
And Green Gables.
Really?
Yes. Anna of Green Gables. The Canadian movie? Of course. With Megan Follows.
Yeah.
Anna of Green Gables and Anne of Avonlea, I could do the entire film.
Really?
Yes. Oh, and didn't Andrew just die?
Oh, no. Don't upset you.
The actor who plays Gilbert.
Gilbert, sorry.
Yeah,
that's
Spot. I just want to.
My apologies. My condolences.
I did do a little.
I don't want to talk about that.
Research. That documentary I was talking about is called Electric Boogaloo: The Wild Untold Story of Canon Films, and they are behind movies like Death Wish, American Ninja, Delta Force, Over the Top, Masters of the Universe, Superman 4, and a movie called The Happy Hooker. They basically
but not Electric Boogaloo. But not Breaking 2, Electric Boogaloo?
Maybe it is. I'm just looking really quickly here. That's what I got there.
Well, that sounds awesome.
Well, it has been amazing to get us all together to talk about this film. And before we get to plugs, I just want to play Frank Langella just to give us a little taste of his power, and we'll wrap it up.
Because he is great.
He, honest to God, great in this movie.
Great.
And I feel
he
like,
is great.
But I also feel like he was like, oh, they don't know what they're doing. So I'll just do four monologues and they'll all be pretty good. Like they're fun.
And engaging. Like I did find myself watching Skeletor and.
For a man behind a mask, like a full mask where you're not seeing eyes or anything.
Yeah. No, you're seeing eyes.
I mean,
but like very small.
Yeah. You're not seeing it. There's no mouth movement.
There's no nothing.
It is mask work.
Yeah.
It is.
He's doing some improv.
Fine mask work.
Here we go.
Of what consequence are you now? This planet, these people, they are nothing to me. The universe is power. You, unstoppable power. And I am that force. I am that power. Kneel before your master.
I love movies.
You are no longer my equal. I am more than man. More than life. I am God.
I love when you have like a good actor in a movie like this, and he's like, "Fuck it, I'll act the shit out of this."
You know, Rich, can I get one more take? I just want to pause more between those final words.
All right, so that brings us to the end of the episode. Somebody did write a detailed description of what the movie is, but it makes no sense. Okay, so
get to Paul. I love it. Listening to movies on tape.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Like while you're mowing the lawn.
Running Scared in Beverly Hills Cop.
And just like putting movies on tape.
Oh, I just put a little.
Listening to them?
Yeah.
Do you just picture, do you imagine what, like, do you remember the scenes and like.
Yeah, I guess like to me it was a sort of like, oh, how could I watch this movie like on the school bus? Like, and I just would put my little recorder in front of my TV and just record them, and you could get it. You know, it was like just dialogue.
I'm amazed. I think that's a great idea.
So great.
And just being like on the bus, and I remember being embarrassed because of like this girl that was sitting next to me, and I'm like, what are you listening to? And she's like, Pink Floyd. And she's like, what are you listening to? I'm like, Running Scared, a movie with Billy Crystal and Gregory Hines. But I remember
listening to a movie?
Yeah.
Hey, guys! Paul Scheer's listening to a movie on his Walkman.
I just felt so.
Get him.
That was also in a period of my life where the only music I listened to were movie soundtracks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I had only movie soundtracks. So I was like listening to like Tom Hanks and Dan Aykroyd doing the rap from the Dragnet movie.
Oh, my God.
Like terrible songs. And because it was all like, you know. Man Size Love from a band called Climax. I know all this. Like, I know so many movie soundtracks. Like, it's amazing. Back to the Future soundtrack on all the time.
Oh, my God. I love it.
Well, what do you have to plug? Would you like to plug anything?
I don't know if I have anything to plug.
You can follow you on Twitter.
Follow me on Twitter.
Yeah.
I think at Tatiana Maslany. Yeah.
All right.
That's all I got. I got nothing.
What do you want to plug?
I'm on Twitter at Ms. MS June Diane, and you can still check out Grace and Frankie, which is streaming on Netflix.
Jason?
I'm in a movie called Sleeping with Other People that's out right now. Depending on where you live and depending on when this episode comes out, please go see that. Jason Sudeikis, Allie Bree, me.
We know her as Allison Bree.
Allison Bree.
My special with Rob Hubel, Crash Test, just came out on iTunes for $3.99 with a bunch of people you love, Aziz, Rob Corddry, Aubrey Plaza, and Jason and I, and June, are all in the league this season, which is airing now on FXX.
And we'll get it out. We'll put it out there. Tatiana's going to be on the season of the league too.
Yeah, great. Yep. Yeah,
Orphan Black League crossover.
Crossover. Let's do it.
I'm doing a major Frank Langella monologue. Lots of pausing.
If you have an issue with this episode, you want to give us a correction and omission, you can do that at the earwolf.com message boards. So follow us on Twitter at HDTGM. And a big thank you to Nate Kiley doing our research, Avril Halley pulling all of our clips, our engineer Ryan, everybody here at Earwolf, July Diaz, oh, the whole crew, everybody. We love you all. Thank you so much. We'll see you next time on the mini episode. Stay tuned.
Everybody, thank you so much for listening to this fun show about Masters of the Universe. If you want to find out more about Masters of the Universe, check out Blake Harris's article, his oral history of Masters of the Universe, available right now at slashfilm.com. Blake Harris has been doing this for a couple weeks now, and they are amazing, great reads. Download them, read them. It's all for free. Go to slashfilm.com, one of my favorite sites on the web, and check out these oral histories, the true How Did This Get Made of How Did This Get Made.
Hello, I'm Emily Foster.
And I'm Deanna Raphael, and we are the hosts of OMFG, the podcast that helps you get hip to what the youths are up to.
And helps you get chill AF. Am I using that right?
We're V-chill, Emily. You know, but right now we are actually here for a very eye-opening episode we just released. Very exciting.
Lizzie Velasquez was born with an inability to gain weight. After being labeled the ugliest woman in the world on YouTube, she did a TED Talk on the epidemic of online bullying.
Now she's fighting for Congress to pass an anti-bullying bill, and starting this week, you can see her incredible documentary, A Brave Heart. We are obsessed with her. We talked to her, and here's a little piece of what she had to say.
Every time I see a bad comment or someone says something, it doesn't really, I mean, there are times it will upset me. I mean, I'm human. But at the same time, there are times where I see it and I think I really do still have a job to do. There are still people that are needing help or needing to see that there is a different outlet for your anger.
To hear more, listen to Lizzie Velasquez, A Brave Heart on OMFG.
And keep listening to OMFG on Wolfpop for more interviews with some amazing young people. You can listen on iTunes, Howl, or your favorite podcasting app.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Adam Sachs, and Chris Bannon. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.
February, true legends from the worlds of comedy and music will unite to form the Supergroup. I'm Tawny Newsom. On every episode, me and my co-host, Alex Kleiner, will invite our talented friends to write and record an original song with us over the course of a week.
You'll hear every step of the process, from writing and rewriting to recording and mixing. Songs with Open Mike Eagle, Paul F. Tompkins, Ted Leo, Woo! Sashir Zameda, Janet Woo! Varney, and more.
The Supergroup. Join the band February 6th on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.